This is a tripod broadcast.
Well, let's start recording, so...
We just did.
Okay, cool. I think this is a key show to listen to because it's
all about emotional masturbation. Journalistic integrity.
It encapsulates everything that we're about.
And I'm sorry.
Now, give that some thought.
Yeah.
With Addison...
I can't be mad at you. You got a haircut.
And Matt.
I would recommend that you stop listening right now.
My and your new favorite song.
We've already decided this is going to be a garbage episode where we talk about terrible, whacked out
no,
things.
It's not.
So why not
this
start
is,
it with
whacked out
with hashtag selfie? Is that what this song is called?
That's the name of the song. Yeah.
That's a terrible name for.
We're not going to talk about whacked out things. We're going to talk about government. As I said, things that are probably true.
Okay. Yeah. That's right.
Things that are probably true. That's the name of this episode. Things that are probably true.
The name of this episode is A Firm Base in Reality.
I was actually thinking, though, things that are probably true. That could be pretty much the title for all of our episodes.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of them could
might
be named,
happen.
Yeah, things... Well, as you say, yeah, some of them could be named things that might be true.
Yeah, things that might
well,
be true.
Well, I wasn't really ready to start, but you hit record.
Oh.
So.
Do you want to stop?
I mean, do you have notes?
I've got some, but we can...
Anyway, say that again, what you were saying, because I really want the listener to catch that.
Well,
the first problem you have.
We're just talking about like any problem that I have as far as like with women and with relationships, first off.
And you are interested in women.
Oh, yeah. Love them. Love them. It's just any woman whose standards are
got
low enough.
Got burned out on guys
yeah,
and decided
well, any,
to move on.
Any woman whose standards are low enough that she will entertain the thought of going out with me. Or
that's problem
being in a relationship
one.
With me. Or, you know, just getting physical with me, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Your first,
I'm
red
immediately
flag.
Suspect of her character because I'm like, seriously, you can't do any better than me.
Yeah,
you know,
well, like
your standards are too low, so I don't want to date you. Anyone who would settle for me.
Well, that's the thing. Then your standards are too high for yourself. Number one, or you just need to be a good person. You need to be a better person.
It's way too hard to be a good person. You know that.
Well,
it's super hard to be. You know, who wants to be a good person?
No one.
Yeah.
By definition, I think.
Like,
if you're going to define the human condition, it's that no one wants to be a good person.
Like the saying goes,
deep down inside.
Hard work pays off in the future. But laziness pays off now.
Welcome to Give That Some Thought. I'm Addison. Joining me is my co-host, Matt Hume, a man who is... No, I had a great line in my head just a second ago off of what you just said. Oh, a man who looks at the short game, Matt Hume.
Exactly. No, I'm constantly thinking of the short game.
A man who looks at the philosophical short game,
uh-huh.
Matt Hume.
Yeah.
Can you close that window?
Sure.
Since this is your abode. The past couple episodes we've had, the start has had someone getting up and doing something. And I'm not pleased with that, but unfortunately, we've done it this time as well.
It's called consummate professionalism.
I don't know what that means.
Neither do I.
Those are the best terms. this is going to be a unique episode.
Yeah, we're going to dive into some esoteric and
some
wild.
Freaky. We're going to get into the weird.
Yeah.
Which should concern you, the listener, having listened to 24 episodes of us already. That if we're starting an episode by saying we're going to get into the weird,
mm-hmm.
it's going to get really weird up in here.
Yeah. Those 24 episodes are already chocked full of weird.
Yes.
I mean...
brimming.
Yeah.
Brimming
when
with
we started
the weird.
When we started this podcast, our hashtag, our slogan was 40% more weird. Like
it
on the
it was?
Yeah, like on the outside of, you know... Like
on the outside of our studio?
Yeah, you know how they put it on like products? Like,
yeah.
Like shampoo or whatever.
Yeah.
Now with 40% more... Shampoo.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the big bottle.
Now with
40%
more weird.
This podcast is already 40% more weird. We're going to dial it up to 11 today with the weirdness. So,
yeah.
With no further ado, I guess.
Well, we'll start with something that's kind of normal that I just saw that I wanted your opinion on.
Okay.
And we can have a quick discussion about that, and then we'll move into the weird.
Sure, sure.
I'm trying to think of a hashtag that goes with 40% more weird.
Mm-hmm.
40 weird. Just 40 weird. 40 weird.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be the hashtag for this episode discussion. Because our thousands of fans need a way to keep track.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
This is from a website, and I'll confess, I don't know anything about this website at all. I don't know who they are. It doesn't seem like much more than a blog, I'll be honest.
Okay.
It doesn't seem like a journalistic entity.
What's the name of the website or the name of the blog?
Well, the name of the website is Faith Likes.
Faith Likes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of that either. But sure. Either way, a couple of my friends shared this on Facebook, and I clicked on it because I was curious based on the headline, and then I read the whole thing, and I want your thoughts on it. But the headline is, "This is why Switchfoot won't sing Christian songs anymore."
Okay.
And I was like, okay, that's interesting. And I'm just going to read the article here. Singer John Foreman was asked if Switchfoot is a quote-unquote Christian band, and his response is definitely something worth reading. This is such an incredible story. That's what makes me think like it's a blog, because it comes from kind of a editorial, definitely editorial mm-hmm. perspective. This is such an incredible story. I love seeing faith-driven bands step outside of their comfort zones for the sake of reaching more people. And this is his answer. Quote, "To be honest, this question grieves me because I feel that it represents a much bigger issue than simply a couple of Switchfoot tunes. In true Socratic form, let me ask you a few questions. Does Lewis or Tolkien mention Christ in any of their fictional series? Are Bach's sonatas Christian? What is more Christ-like? Feeding the poor, making furniture, cleaning bathrooms, or painting a sunset? There is a schism between the sacred and the secular in all of our modern minds. The view that a pastor is more, quote, Christian than a girls' volleyball coach is flawed and heretical. The stance that a worship leader is more spiritual than a janitor is condescending and flawed. These different callings and purposes further demonstrate God's sovereignty. Many songs are worthy of being written. Switchfoot will write some. Keith Green, Bach, and perhaps yourself have written others. Some of these songs are about redemption, others about the sunrise, others about nothing in particular, written for the simple joy of music. None of these songs has been born again, and to that end, there is no such thing as Christian music.
Mm-hmm.
No, Christ didn't come and die for my songs. He came for me. Yes, my songs are a part of my life, but judging from Scripture, I can only conclude, and this is the part that I love, I can only conclude that our God is much more interested in how I treat the poor and the broken and the hungry than the personal pronouns I use when I sing. I am a believer. Many of these songs talk about this belief. An obligation to say this or do that does not sound like the glorious freedom that Christ died to afford me. I do have an obligation, however, a debt, a debt that cannot be settled by my lyrical decisions. My life will be judged by my obedience, not my ability to confine my lyrics to this box or that. We all have a different calling. Switchfoot is trying to be obedient to who we were called to be. We're not trying to be Audio Adrenaline or U2 or POD or Bach. We're trying to be Switchfoot. You see, a song that has the words Jesus Christ is no more or less Christian than an instrumental piece. I've heard lots of people say Jesus Christ and they weren't talking about their Redeemer. You see, Jesus didn't die for any of my tunes. So there's no hierarchy of life or songs or occupation, only obedience. We have a call to take up our cross and follow. We can be sure that these roads will be different for all of us. Just as you have one body and every part of you and every part has a different function, so in Christ, we who are many form one body and each of us belongs to the others. Please be slow to judge, quote, brothers who have a different calling."
Okay.
So, what are your thoughts on that?
It seems to me that from the Christian's point of view,
mm-hmm.
there's too many people who search out music to conform to their already held beliefs. And this is not the purpose of art. The purpose of art is to turn on something emotionally in you. Mm-hmm. That you didn't know was there already.
Right.
It's half illumination and half entertainment. And in today's culture, it's either art or entertainment. There is no between the two. So if you're going to make art, you have to leave aside entertainment. And entertainment, in and of itself, really you're pandering to somebody's already held viewpoints, number one, but also their emotional expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when you create art simply to pander to somebody else's emotional expectations,
that's not art.
Of what they need, it ceases to be art. And now we are talking about a pop band here, so it's mm-hmm. not high art, but it's still some form of artistry. It still takes talent. You still want to say something and have some sort of message. Now, I think,
and Switchfoot is, I have seen them in concert. They are really good.
But the thing that I think probably aggravates Switchfoot about their music is that so many people put that label on them, and I don't think that from their inception they really tried to be a band that was labeled.
Mm-hmm.
they didn't really come up as Christian band. They were a Christian band that played Christian music, and it just so happened that their following became youth groups,
right,
and stuff like that. And so when they were a small band, they were playing in front of youth groups, and then as they got bigger, they started playing the Warped Tour.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's simply they were pigeonholed from their beginning, and it's not. I mean, I'm not a fan of the band at all, really. But you know, they were pigeonholed from the beginning, and they became something that they didn't intend to be.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they're trying to say that they don't want their art or their music to be interpreted as having these hidden meanings that aren't there.
Yeah,
and I think that all artists want that. They want the message they're trying to convey to be conveyed, and not somebody reading between the lines. It reminds me of the story we did a couple months ago about Ann Coulter trying to read Christian themes into Breaking Bad.
Oh right, yeah. Did we talk about that on this show or the Breaking Bad show? One of the two.
I think it was this show, but
same kind of thing though.
Yeah.
Well, and we talked about, because I think a few years ago there was a book written where they did the same thing with The Matrix and mm-hmm. things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, that's all people have done with, I mean, the two most popular, obviously, Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, or I guess that's the one, but the Chronicles of Narnia series, and then the Lord of the Rings. And while those themes are certainly there, and they were in fact written from that place of heart or that place of mind, from that place, that doesn't necessarily mean that this story is here so that you will at the end be at an altar in tears begging for a savior.
Yeah, but people want it to be that way.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
and they want that for Switchfoot Music and Captain America and whatever else is popular.
Yeah.
It's just how it's done. And I don't think that's right. I've actually had a conversation with a couple of people close to me about, about this show. And they're kind of asking me the same thing. Well, they're like, well, is it a Christian show? And it's like, well, I'm a believer in Christ. Christ came to save me.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I believe in.
No, it's not a Christian show.
No, it's not.
We talk about what we talk about.
Yeah, and I'm not doing it to bring you to a place of repentance or brokenness or whatever, or any sort of spiritual place. If you go there on your own, great. That's a place that I believe that you would have gotten to anyways, you know, whatever that journey looked like.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't. It's not a Christian show.
Yeah.
Not that I wouldn't do one, but this and what I'm doing here is not that. It seems weird to call it artistry, but the what we do here is not about our beliefs about eternal life through Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
It's just not. And I think there was evidence that's in the show we had 2 weeks
one
ago.
I think the biggest thing that any Christian can do to evangelize, to disciple, to be a good Christian,
mm-hmm.
is first and foremost be a decent person.
Yeah.
Be a decent, normal person.
Yeah.
What I mean by that is don't have secret agendas.
Yeah.
If you want to make friends with people, if you want to be a good evangelist to your friends and mm-hmm. win souls, quote mm-hmm. unquote, for Christ, be a normal person and don't.
And be transparent in that too.
Well, don't have hidden agendas.
Right.
Don't. It seems to me that so many Christians that I've met, especially when I was younger, they will make friends with you, but you always know that the ulterior motive, the hidden agenda that they have, is to convert you.
Right.
That's the hidden agenda.
Yeah.
And so you never really become a true friend with them.
Yeah, and you don't have any common bond because they're there for one reason.
Yeah, and that's what has turned me off. That's what turns me off to Christian music, is the hidden agenda. It's not just music. It's not. There's only a few people, I think, in Christian music, they're few and far between, but who have actually just made a record and spilled their guts.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a normal
few and far
musician
between. Yeah.
would do.
Well, see, to me, I think, and it's almost a problem, but it's annoying that worship music is so popular, right? Like, because certainly there are songs that are written that you sing at church, in front of church, to God, and that's what they're for,
mm-hmm.
right? They're worshipful songs.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with having a radio station or CDs of those, right?
Sure. It's a market.
Yeah. Well, and not only that, but that's a place where your heart needs to be other than just on Sunday morning, I would think, you know, for the Christian. But then you have other stuff that's like pop or rock or rap or whatever it is that's kind of the same thing. And it's like, to me, those are two different things. And if you're coming from a place of realness in who you are, regardless of what kind of music you make, pop, rock, rap, blues, whatever it is, mm-hmm. then who you are as an artist is supposed to come through, not necessarily let's stand up on a Sunday and worship, because that music is on its own. That's what that's for.
Yeah. I'd
at least the way I...
All Christian music turns me off, because all Christian music to me has an agenda.
Yeah.
Of we want to convert you, or we want to put you in this certain frame of mind, and if you want to be put in that frame of mind, that's fine. But I don't.
Well, I would think that worship music, that's where the exception is, because it's for church. Like it's,
yeah, but even that, I mean, worship music from Chris Tomlin to Hillsong or whatever, it's made to induce the hypnotic state of the brain in which you feel that corporate worship is actually accomplishing something.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it does. That's why do you think we sing songs first?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think for the past 100,000 years, not 100,000, but last 100,000 or 1,000 years or whatever.
6,000?
Yeah, 6,000. Why do you think we
sang before the
yeah,
service.
Sing before the service.
Right. It's before the message.
And music does this all the time in religion,
mm-hmm.
from drum beats and shamanism to...
Right,
Gregorian chants. It's been there. It's to induce the hypnotic state. That's what music does. It mm-hmm. triggers the thing in your brain, and you get induced to a hypnotic state where you're more open to the susceptibility of religion and religious fervor.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not just pigeonholing Christians here by saying that their worship music is casting spells on them, ooh, which I know is the Independent Baptist
right.
interpretation of what
right.
I just said.
Right.
But what I just said is that it happens in all religions.
Right.
Because music is, and whether or not it's on purpose, I don't think it's on something that religions do on purpose. Music just seems to fit with worship or with some sort of with religious ceremonies in general.
Right.
And then that's where you get it from. But yeah, Hillsong is super emotional. My emotions have gotten
right.
quite a charge sitting in church or standing in church singing along with the Hillsong song. You feel the spirit, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But there's so many factors that are factoring into that quote-unquote feeling. I mean, mass hypnosis has happened before. It happens all the time.
Right. Well, yeah, and one such example of mass hypnosis is the American people.
Yeah. Media and the mark of the beast, the blood moon,
it all ties together. Else. Did you get up and see the blood moon, by the way?
I did yeah.
last night. I checked it out. It was kind of cool. I saw a couple people refer to it on Twitter as the Instagram moon, which I thought was kind of funny.
Yeah,
but yeah, it was pretty red. It was almost like the shade of that lamp.
Yeah.
Yeah,
not blood, but orange.
Yeah.
A dark orange.
It was kind of cool, though.
Yeah.
It was neat. It doesn't happen all the time.
The top half of the moon was a little bit darker than the bottom half.
Yes, it was.
So it wasn't, yep. It wasn't completely...
Bloody.
Yeah. You know, it was like a medium rare moon.
Yeah.
To
medium.
Or
medium
yeah,
rare to medium.
Medium. Yeah, medium.
Depending on where you get it cooked.
Yeah.
Because if you're talking medium rare at like an actual steakhouse,
mm-hmm.
then it wasn't medium rare.
It's like an Applebee's medium.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Thank you.
It's an Applebee's
it's like
medium.
The worst cooked steak on planet Earth.
Yeah.
Like, and you know the reason why they can't do that, right? Like the reason that's like smaller bar and grills and chain bar and grills and things like that can't cook a steak right, because their instructions, I don't think it's a problem with their instructions, because you know when you're taught as a cook, it's like, well, this mm-hmm. Keeping it on for this long is medium rare. Well, it's because their meat is so processed and is so what's the word I'm looking for, so consumer, and there's so much of it, you can't come up with a cooking process that's going to cover every 8-ounce piece of steak that they're going to put on the grill.
Yeah.
I really think that's the reason.
I think it comes down to more the individual cook themselves and what they're doing. I think it has a lot, whether or not you get a good steak or a bad steak, it has a lot.
Whether he's texting or smoking weed. Or,
yeah. Right. Well,
that's the thing, though, because not every cook's going to cut into it and have an idea
first
of
first off,
it's
no
medium,
cook should be cutting into a piece of meat to know whether or not it's done. If you're a good cook, you could tell either by looking at the outside or feeling the surface tension of whatever type of freaking meat.
Why
you're
are
cooking,
we not doing a cooking show?
You can tell
the
how done it is.
The masses are missing out on the hypnosis yeah. of you teaching them about cooking.
Yeah, I mean it's not hard.
Rocket science
to cook a steak,
right?
And without cutting into it, once you know the basics of what you're doing,
right?
It's not hard, so you should never have to cut into meat,
right?
To see whether or not it's done, because what you're doing is you're releasing all the moisture out of the meat.
Yeah. Well, instantly. They don't, but they don't do any kind of feel it or watch it or anything. It's just, oh, medium rare is 10 minutes or whatever it is.
Fine.
And then they just throw it on there and then, okay, it's done. Put it on the plate, get it out to the table. Let's get the next 100 orders that are
but
on
for
screen.
Instance, if you go to Applebee's on a Saturday night at 10 p.m., you're going to get a bad steak. If you go to Saturday night at 6:37, you'll probably get a good steak.
Yeah.
But, you know, your cook's been working there for 7 hours now behind that grill. He's tired. He's not paying that much attention.
Yeah, he's
you're
texting.
Going there late.
He's trying
to
figure out how he's going to be able to get to the Quick Trip and get a case of beer before 1 a.m. Like, he's got a lot of other things on his mind.
Yeah.
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 Anyways, that being said, do you have anything more to say about that Switchfoot thing?
No, I mean, I pretty much said it. I think that...
I thought it was interesting. I did like where they came from. Because I think they were... I mean, he just was kind of like... Basically, he's like, well, you're asking the wrong question. Because it's not whether music is Christian or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I think it kind of goes against that whole idea of, like, labeling everything. Like, well, is it a Christian movie? Is it not a Christian movie? Like, it's not... Movies aren't Christian. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I like the way he said that Jesus didn't die for music. Like, Jesus didn't die for movies either.
Yeah.
Like, it... It's, so, movies aren't Christian.
Mm-hmm.
Movies can be Christian and have Christian themes and tell a Christian story, or they cannot be.
Yeah.
And that has nothing to do with...
What's the one movie that just came out or is about to come out called... I think it's like The Cool Life of Billy or something like that.
I have no idea what you're talking
about. It's
about
like this four-year-old who dies. And
what?
This four-year-old has a near-death experience and he goes to heaven.
Oh, no. I heard about that. Sean Hannity was talking about
that.
Yeah.
And then he comes back and like he has memories of...
Yeah.
Of like children that they had miscarried in the past.
Yeah. And he's been to heaven and back.
Yeah, apparently. And talked to like his dead brothers and sisters.
I hate everyone that talks about near death and
that to me is so much hocus. And not, but maybe he did. Okay, let's. I have an open mind. Maybe he went to heaven. Okay, and it's not just his
heaven.
Not just
because then by definition he couldn't be here. I don't think. But
it's not just his family's religious fervor, and that's the only thing and the first thing he knows. So he extrapolates from that as far as like it's. It's that whole situation of, oh, so your kid went to heaven? Good for them. Talk to your kid about it, and let's just leave it at that. But it's this whole cultural thing that's sprang up in the Christian community right now around people who are
going to heaven all the time. No.
Well, using this movie like they did with The Passion of the Christ.
Right.
Like trying to get it booked at theaters.
But see,
trying
same
to
thing.
Sell
Not
tickets
a Christian
and buy
movie.
Tickets and give tickets away.
I don't consider Passion of Christ a Christian movie. I've never seen it.
No, Passion of Christ is BDSM. Passion of Christ is torture porn.
Well,
that's
one way to look at it. But I would go one step this side of it and say it may be a great movie for what it is,
mm-hmm.
The story of the crucifixion. But that's not the point of the movie is not so you leave it and say, oh, I need a savior.
Well, the story of the crucifixion has been overblown in Christianity due to quote unquote passion plays, which have been around for 1,500 years.
Have you ever been at a passion play?
I've been to some Rich Christ Baptist Church.
Have you been in any?
No, I don't think so.
I've been in one. I played Nero.
Nero?
Yeah, I screamed about burning Christians.
Yeah. Nero burned everybody.
Yeah. Pretty much everybody he didn't like.
Yeah.
Which is what any Roman emperor with absolute authority did.
Not everyone. Not all the Roman emperors. A lot of them, but not all of them.
But at a certain point, if you had absolute authority... Wouldn't you just burn the people you didn't like, Matt? Like, if someone came to you and said, you know what, Matt, we've been listening to the podcast, we've done some brain scans, like, you just, Supreme Leader Matt,
mm-hmm.
whatever you say goes for the United States of America.
Sure.
Look me in the eye and tell me the first thing you wouldn't do is light Ann Coulter on fire.
No, I would banish her. I would take, like, a country that no one wants to go to, like Siberia. Okay? There are people living in Siberia,
but not by
choice.
Siberian fan base.
I'm sorry, but most people who in Siberia aren't living there by choice, and if they are, they kind of want to get out of there.
They kind of are idiots. No,
no, or you know what I would do?
Mm-hmm.
Take the trash pile, the trash island,
mm-hmm.
several trash islands that are floating in
the
oceans
of
the world.
Do those exist?
Yeah, you don't know
about
that?
There's trash islands?
They're floating islands of trash in the oceans.
BS, really?
No, there's like three of them.
How big are they? Are they like miles?
Like the biggest
diameter?
One is the size of Massachusetts.
That's a lie.
No, I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. Trash Island. Google it.
Trash Island sounds like a really bad grunge,
they have their
grunge
own,
band.
They have their own ecosystems of like algae that lives on them and seagulls and
Shut
stuff.
Shut up.
No, I'm serious. I'm serious.
Are there any people that live out there?
No. But they're just giant floating gobs of trash that have accumulated together because we've dumped so much stuff. And it's not like we intentionally tried to make these.
No,
it's,
right.
We've been dumping so much stuff in the oceans over the past 100 years. It's all come together and coalesced. And so, I'm serious. It's stuck together in these giant floating islands of trash in just floating around in the ocean. I would take those and I would patch them together. So there's just one big
trash island.
Trash island. And then send all the people I didn't like there. If I'm Supreme Leader, that's what I do. So Ann Coulter's going there. I don't know who else. But we've talked about my fantasies of world domination before. The listeners are
yes,
bored of
have.
That.
Yeah, it's true.
Let's talk about something a little bit more esoteric.
Let's bore them with something very different.
Yeah. We've been 100% weird up to this point. Let's give them that 40% extra weird right now.
Yeah, 40% weird.
So what did you want to talk about?
Well, this actually spawned from a comment on Twitter by one of our listeners. I don't know if I'd call him a fan. One of our listeners. And he said, we were making jokes. It was late at night on Twitter. And it was getting jokey, as Twitter tends to do late at night. And he made the comment that, because we were talking about conspiracy theories or something like that. And he made the comment that, well, we all got one right because of the NSA.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and that got me to thinking, because if you think about it, eight years ago, the people that were saying the government has the ability to capture mass amounts of metadata in terms of online communication mm-hmm. and cellular communication and things like that, and they're hanging on to it and they're analyzing it,
yeah.
You would have said, okay.
And there's a small group that's been beating the drum for the past 15 years about this.
Yes, and beating it fairly loudly in the way that they can. You know,
gaining steam.
And Snowden pretty much proved all of that.
Yeah.
Right? The whole program with cell phones, with email, with agreements. Well, not really agreements, because then they kind of denied it and acted, quote-unquote, against it or whatever. But, backdoors into these different companies, like sort of the big major providers of internet to the world, they're kind of in on and watching all of that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's one quote unquote conspiracy theory that is actually right. It's mm-hmm. not a conspiracy. Definitely happening.
Yeah.
The government is doing that.
Yeah. The
period.
NSA and PRISM are
real programs, real agencies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That, we've known the NSA has been around for a while, but they're actively collecting data on everyday citizens. And it's a lot of data, and they're not deleting it.
Right.
They're thumbing through it.
Send it off
to giant servers.
Yeah.
And there's, I guess, I don't know if it's in Utah or in Colorado.
It's Utah. I know there's one in Utah, yeah.
The huge
data
server
center.
Bank.
Yeah.
That with, I don't know how much, tetrabytes, zildabytes, or whatever of information.
Right, right.
I think
the highest measurement we have is petabytes, maybe. Yeah. I'm not positive.
It's being stored about all the communications in the world.
Yeah.
Every communication that the United States has access
foreign,
to.
Foreign, domestic.
Yeah.
Whatever
and not just
comes
the
over
States,
the air
but,
and is not encrypted.
But also the United States and its allies, too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been happening for a while, since 9/11.
Quick point on that, though. Because we actually caught that panel or whatever on C-SPAN the other day with last night.
Yeah.
About... They were talking about the NSA and stuff. To me, the funny thing is, and here's maybe the greater question. So it's come out about specific countries that we're watching all the communications, right?
Yeah.
And that we looked into, like, the Kremlin, and like we looked at like
Germany, France, Russia.
Like really specific people we listen to mm-hmm. in other countries. And these other countries have not, in other, at least publicly, they haven't come out and said, oh, we can't believe you would do that.
Angela Merkel has in Germany.
But what that tells me is that every country on the face of the planet is doing this.
Yeah.
Either with the United States or on their own. Mm-hmm. And so, if anything, they're just kind of, they got their head in their hands and they're like, really, US? You had to blow the whole surveillance game for all of us.
Think about it.
Like, we're trying to watch people too. And here you go, letting this Snowden cat put this stuff in the news. Come on.
Think about it in the corporate sense. Let's say you have two giant umbrella corporations, and all the other, and they control every other corporation, right? Mm-hmm. We have that. We have the United States and China, two giant umbrella companies that together control or influence every other country in the world.
Yep.
And we know that both the China, both Chinese and the United States are actively collecting almost every
massive
communication,
right,
and every communication that's going on in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so if
between
if,
the two, you can just swap them like trading cards.
Yeah. If those two countries are on board with this, that means that every one of their allies is also on board with this.
Yeah.
And if not on board, at least in the dark, and once they found out about it, they had to throw their hands up in the air and say, okay, well, oh well, we can't do anything about it now.
Yeah, like, just like, well, that crap happens.
Yeah. You know, whether or not Germany knew that they were, you know, a year ago, whether or not Germany knew they were being spied on by the U.S. and their prime minister was having her emails read, whether or not they knew
by
that.
By the United States agency.
You know, now that they personnel. Do know, what can they do about it? There's nothing they can do about it.
Right, exactly.
So they have to throw their hands up and say, oh, well.
Neither largely can.
This is the new world order that we are, have been, the post-World War II new world order we've been born into.
And the Cold
War. United States dominance.
Let me throw this out there. Don't you think that the Cold War, and, I mean, I'm sure you're going to take this and run straight to folks like Reagan, but just in general, if you think about the Cold War, because the Cold War was the big precursor to 9/11, right? 9/11, we had people actually die. Right, planes flew into buildings. Okay.
Yeah, well, there were people who died during the Cold War too, but
well,
wasn't
right,
as
but
publicized.
Yeah,
it wasn't as big.
It wasn't on television. It wasn't a quote unquote attack. Like,
yeah,
it wasn't an act of war, if you will. So 9/11, the Cold War is the precursor to 9/11 to condition people to the idea that your government, to protect you, needs to pretty much know everything about you and everyone else.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's that, but especially in the 1960s, there was a culture of fear. Think about it.
It well, exactly, have, and on, certainly after 9/11.
Yeah, you have, on one hand, you have the cultural and the sexual revolution.
Yeah.
Hippies. Okay.
Yeah.
But the revolution in academia, mm-hmm. Revolution sexually, and the cultural revolution. And then on the other hand, you have this giant oligarchy mm-hmm. that is staring you in the face from the other side of the ocean, and they're trying to rule the world, too.
In a different way.
So the United States really in the 60s and into the 70s really did promote a culture of fear. And then you had the surplus and the excess of the 80s, the establishment really of capitalism in America, and not just capitalism. When I say capitalism, I don't mean straight up regular old American capitalism.
Right.
I mean trickle-down economics. Mm-hmm. I mean capitalism that... lead you incrementally to become an oligarchy, which mm-hmm. we are today. There was a couple articles that came out past few days about how the United States has descended into an oligarchy where
right.
we have people who aren't elected to office, who have vast amounts of money, who are controlling everything that happens
Huge
with our laws
interests.
And with our government.
Right. right.
And we
which
have,
we've talked about a lot, too.
Instead of having 40 people by the people, we have a couple hundred shareholders in the United States government.
Yeah.
And these couple 100 people hold basically shares due to special interests,
yeah.
due to the money in Washington, due to Citizens United, due to McCutcheon, due to lobbyists in Washington now, the
right.
culture that's been there for 100 years. We have shareholders in the United States government. There's a couple hundred people who own shares in the United States government, and those are the people who are allowed to say what goes.
Yeah.
And make the laws that actually matter.
Yeah.
We can vote on laws that don't matter. It doesn't matter if pot's legalized in the United States. It does not fucking matter at all.
Right.
At right. all. All that matter. What? So we get to choose that, you know, gay marriage. Does gay marriage matter to people? Yes.
No.
It's a civil right.
Well, okay,
but does it matter as
yeah.
a function of government?
No.
No.
Not one way or the other.
No. So we're deciding on gay marriage. We're deciding on abortion. We're deciding on,
things
on
that,
recreational
things that the government,
drug use.
For what the government has built itself into,
yeah.
does not care about.
But we need to be deciding about budget. We need to be deciding about defense budget. We need
personal
to be,
liberty.
Personal liberties and the protection of the
Civil
Constitution.
Liberties and things like that, yeah.
Yeah. And we have no say in what happens to our civil liberties at all anymore.
Yeah. Now, let's bring that back around. To start another discussion, I mentioned 9/11 a second ago. You buy into that?
That it happened? Yeah, it happened.
No. well, that happened, but the moon landing
the event,
definitely didn't.
Oh, that's another one I forgot to add to the list. Moon landing.
Whether it was a hoax or not.
Mm-hmm. Okay, 9/11 conspiracy. I used to live with a roommate who was big into the 9/11 conspiracies.
Yeah.
A truther, as they called them.
Yeah, 4 to 5 years after.
When YouTube
really, really hit the scene hard. And
yeah, this kind of when everything blew up and then people started taking note. There are some good theories to it. The explosion to the base of the tower, that's not concrete evidence to me, so I kind of throw that out.
It's not concrete or steel anymore.
Exactly. What really bugs me, though...
9/11 jokes.
...is if you look at the Pentagon...
Right.
...one plane flew into the Pentagon.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
First off, the plane is too big for the hole it's supposedly made.
Uh-huh.
Right. There are no skid marks on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from the way the hole is, there's only one way it could have happened. It hit the ground, skidded for a couple hundred feet, and crashed into the building.
Huh.
Okay.
Right.
If it had just hit the building and not hit the ground and skidded before, it would have done a lot more damage, and it wouldn't just been a simple hole in the building. It would have been half the building destroyed, okay?
Right.
Or not half the building, but a large chunk of the building completely destroyed.
A larger chunk than was destroyed.
Yeah.
Right.
It's basically like, you know, it's the plane scooted up to the wall and then punched a hole 40 feet in, okay, into this building. That's what the hole suggests. However, there were no skid marks on the ground.
Right.
Photographs taken the day of, a day after they had pulled the wreckage of the plane away from the building, right? There were no skid marks on the ground to indicate that the plane had hit the ground and skidded in to the Pentagon. Instead, it looks like it just straight hit it.
So what do you think then, based on those questions? Or based on those... Because see, here's something I learned a while back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I looked into... Not really looked into, I say that loosely, but I looked into a lot of this stuff online and just, I mean, you can go to, there's certain places on Reddit where you can just, if you got 8 hours to blow overnight, like just go there and there you go, it's done. And I kind of done that a few times. And because there's a lot of people that have a lot of questions about some of the other buildings or the other World Trade Towers and how they came down and different things like that. And to me, the majority of it, I guess I could pretty much chalk up to in my mind, like, well, you've got planes flying into buildings. Okay. It's not really the type of event where you have people sitting there documenting. Like, it's not like, because there's all these simulators and computer simulations that have run of planes running into buildings, things like that. Well, it's not like that. You can get it as close as you can, even physically, in terms of the buildings and the planes and the fuel and the payloads and things like that and explosion and thrust and on and
what
on and on.
What you're saying is basically we can't apply the scientific method to finding
out
what...
That's not what I'm saying.
No, what you are saying is you can't reproduce the same thing. There's certain unique...
Qualities to that event.
Exactly.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
That
is what
I'm
saying.
You can't keep repeating it
yes.
over and over to see whether or not that outcome is actually true of all the variables that were involved. Yeah, so you are applying the scientific method to it by saying that you can't
reproduce it as
an experiment.
You can't reproduce those variables.
Exactly, yeah.
You can get them close,
yeah,
but you can't reproduce them for that day or that event or because we don't know. I mean, there was obviously people flying the planes, you know, what they were doing in terms of speed and thrust. And I'm not close to the possibility either of other... explosives. I'm totally not close to that. Like, because people are like, "Well, that proves the government did it." Why? Why does it prove the government did it? If this is a terrorist attack, like you do know that terrorists use bombs, right? Mm-hmm. This was a unique event in terms of flying planes into things, but terrorists are fans of bombs. I don't know if you missed the memo, but that's what they like to do.
Well, they did miss the memo because the memo came about a month before 9/11.
Yeah, that's true, too.
There's a verified memo that went to the White House, that went to the FBI, went to the CIA.
And it was a pretty specific threat, too.
It was very
right?
specific. It was about Al-Qaeda specifically. And they said that,
targeting the
that
World Trade
we're
Center,
going
right?
to target the World Trade Center. And people ignored it.
Yeah.
Now, to me... Given everything that had happened in the years up to that, the bombings of the World Trade Center in 1993,
the
USS Cole in 1998,
the embassy, wherever it was,
we see that Al-Qaeda at this point is an organization bent on terrorizing the United States and blowing something up
right.
and killing a lot of people.
Right.
So when this memo comes across and no one does anything about it, that tells me that there are people who intentionally turned a blind eye to this,
Or,
okay,
let me pose the flip side of that, though. If you are an intelligence person or even a staffer at the White House or whatever, or the CIA even, or the NSA or whoever, wherever, you must see 1,000 memos in a week that have a specific target named, right? Maybe not that many.
Okay,
100 a
there
week.
Are thousands of memos that go out every week.
Or 100
that are meant.
But even if it's 100.
No, but that are meant for.
So how do you say, well, this one's going to happen and this one isn't?
Okay. Here's the thing. There are thousands of memos that go out in the CIA, in the White House, in the FBI,
the intelligence
FBI
community.
That are supposed to go to the president's desk or somebody else's desk, right?
Mm-hmm.
The head of that. And they're people along the lines of the ladder of.
That toss them in the trash.
Yeah, exactly. And they make a judgment call. Okay, this is important. This isn't important.
But even then, that's just human judgment.
Yeah.
Like, that's not based on anything.
Yeah. But the fact is that somebody should have caught it unless there was some sort of...
Hocus pocus.
Hocus pocus going on where somebody
And
said,
you think there was, specifically.
I think that there was, simply because let's rewind about 20 years,
mm-hmm.
okay, and see what was going on in Afghanistan in the 80s.
Yeah.
In Afghanistan in the 80s, Russia was having the same problem with it that we were having 10 years ago. Afghanistan is right on the Russian border.
Right.
And there were a lot of warring tribes. There was a lot of violence.
And
a lot of terrorists
yeah.
who were terrorizing Russia because it was the closest Western country or Western-like culture.
Right.
Right. And they were having a lot of problems. So what the United States did, thanks to Reagan and Bush Sr., they went in and they instigated everything.
Mm-hmm.
They funded Al-Qaeda. They gave weapons to Al-Qaeda.
Because in that scenario, they were, quote-unquote, the best in them.
They took a young Saudi prince, who was, I think, a second or third son of a Saudi prince.
Mm-hmm.
They took him. They brought him to the United States. They gave him CIA training. And then they sent him to Afghanistan and to go screw around with stuff to make the Russian Empire fall.
Right.
And that young Saudi became very influential, became very popular, became very spiritual, was reconverted to Muslims, because before this person was a very materialistic person.
Reconverted to Islam.
Reconverted to Islam, excuse me.
Right.
He was a very materialistic person, had a Western mindset, really
right.
didn't practice Islam. When he went to Afghanistan, started as a freedom fighter, and was paid to do so, he became very devout to Islam, and he became like a holy man, and people started following him. And then he decided that his real crusade was on the West.
Right.
That man's name?
Saddam Hussein.
No.
Yeah.
Who? You know it. Osama bin Laden.
Oh, yeah.
This is a documented fact.
Mm-hmm.
This happened. Osama bin Laden was a Saudi prince that we made into a CIA operative and sent to Afghanistan so that he could screw shit up for the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
And... Yeah, and then we pointed fingers.
They get too smart.
Yeah, then we started pointing fingers at Islam and started pointing fingers at Afghanistan and Iraq and saying it's their fault. It's their fault. No, it was our fault because
right.
we created a monster that we couldn't control.
Right. Anyways, that said, so on 9/11, you're not
that
necessarily...
to me is a bigger conspiracy around 9/11. Not
right.
not the towers
oh,
falling.
Absolutely.
What happened 20
no.
years before?
Yeah. That led up to the political climate
yeah.
and the geopolitical climate of 9/11.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The United States,
I'll hand you that.
The United
yeah.
States created a supervillain.
Yeah.
We created a supervillain, like, out of the comic books.
By mistake or not.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, whether
well,
someone was actually saying...
He was supposed to work for us.
Right.
He was supposed to be supervillainous for us.
Right. And it turns out, yeah.
Yeah.
I
mean, you create a rabid dog and then it turns on you. You can't really... You can't blame the dog if it bites
if
you.
Bit.
You know,
right.
you
yeah.
create a mean dog.
Yeah,
you know, you can't point the finger at the dog when you get bit.
Right.
So, yeah. But
there's 9/11.
Yeah. The bigger picture from 9/11, I think, is that it whether or not it was intentional or not, it was by the United States government. It still allowed the United States government to expand programs like the NSA to in the name of fighting terrorism.
Oh, and it absolutely did. Yeah, and that's another thing, because those facts are in place, right? Like the Patriot Act and the things that it began to allow, and then it was further modified to allow even more and things like that. Like, that's all after that whole the terrorists are coming after us phase, right? Like, that's when it happened. okay? Whether it was a legitimate attack by a group or an organization or an individual, or whether it was some sort of government, whatever, the fact is it has been used by the United States government in order to trample all over our liberties.
Yeah, in order basically to create an Orwellian
state,
super state,
yeah,
in which in which we're debt slaves, which we already kind of were before. But yeah, I don't know. Like, on a scale of 1 to 10, of whether or not I believe mm-hmm. in trutherism or not about 9/11.
Well, let's put it this way. Let's ask the question a little different. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being it was entirely, 1 being not at all, right? Mm-hmm. How much hocus pocus do you think is around 9/11? If you want to put it that way.
Personally, for me, it's about a 6.
1 out of 10. I think I'd go with 6, too.
Yeah?
5 or 6.
Okay.
Yeah, because there's...
So, Matt went 5.
You went 6.
Or no, Addison went 5. I went 6.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Let's move on to the next one on the list.
Okay, well, it's a big list.
It is a big list. Just pick one, and let's go.
Well, we talked about the NSA a little bit. We mentioned evil corporations. Do you think that our government is run by corporate interests?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
So that's a 10 for you.
Yeah.
It's a 10 for me, too.
Yeah.
Do
you want to get into that or talk about it at all? I mean, that's something we talk about on the show.
It's kind of, we have. It's a little self-explanatory. But
politicians are bought by big companies and big people mm-hmm. with lots of money.
Yeah.
What's the next topic?
I mentioned it a little bit before. No individual has the capital or the time to hire lobbyists, expensive lawyers.
Right.
To decipher the law for them, and to then write the law, and then go shove it into a politician's hand along with a bunch of money, and say this is what needs to happen so that your business can function.
Which is why constituents don't matter anymore.
Exactly. Yeah.
Largely.
So, yeah.
I think on local government, I think even in state government, I think that shifts a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But at the federal government level, like if you hear the old adage, like follow the money. If you follow the money of the federal government, like it's a freaking joke, dude.
Yeah,
like it's a laughable joke.
Mm-hmm. We talked about this before.
Like it really, really is.
The IRS hasn't been audited in 19 years since 1995. I think
the
last time the IRS was audited.
Yeah. Yep.
That's another thing that kind of leads to that is well, the and fact that money is out of control in Washington.
I mentioned this to you the other day. The whole conspiracy of them targeting conservative groups over liberal groups, whether and again, let's throw out the whole liberals are saying, oh, it's a bunch of Tea Partiers going nuts over it, and let's throw out the Tea Party saying, I can't believe they would trample all over freedom-loving individuals. Let's throw out both of those sides of it, right? The fact that the numbers are different for the types of groups that the IRS looked at before granting these types of requests and needed secondary and third looks and things like that, the fact that those numbers are different is bad, right? We can agree on that.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
The IRS should not do that as an entity that is doing what they're supposed to do. That's not what they should be doing.
Yeah, definitely.
So. Definitely. You know, and if you want to say, well, that's the White House, or that's the—I can't remember the chick's name that everyone keeps saying, the chick that resigned, that they say did most of this or whatever. Her name slips my mind at the moment, but everyone, you know, everyone's like, oh, it's her, or it came from the White House, or of course it's the Democratic administration. Say whatever you want,
mm-hmm.
but the IRS and their function—they abandon their function by doing this.
Yeah, yeah.
Period. For me, as far as I'm concerned. So. Next topic.
Speaking, segueing from the government into another branch of government. However, this branch of government doesn't belong to the government.
Chemtrails.
No, we don't control it. United States citizens and the United States government doesn't control it. The Federal Reserve.
Oh, I knew we were going there. Yeah. Yep.
Is that why you said chemtrails first?
Because
you knew so well. Well,
no, as soon as you said
the
sentence a second ago, then I was like, yeah.
The Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
So
chemtrails was a joke. We can get into chemtrails in a second. But
the Federal Reserve set up in 1917 by Woodrow Wilson.
Yeah.
The great Woodrow Wilson. Or expanded in 1917. I think it was set up in 1912 and then expanded by the Wilson administration.
Well, it's a private bank.
Yeah, it is a private bank.
It's a private bank.
That prints money.
Like if you and I wanted to start a bank. That's the exact same thing, only we don't control the United States money supply.
Yeah.
And a global currency.
Yeah. It's currency manipulation, but like, the Federal Reserve,
marinate, like, oh my God.
Yeah, then you have to ask who owns the Federal Reserve.
Yeah. Bankers.
Oh, well, the World Bank.
Yeah.
International Monetary Fund.
Bankers. Rich people.
Yeah. And I think the International Bank of Settlers.
Mm-hmm.
That own.
Which basically is all rich bankers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's private banking industry that controls the economy and
the dollar
currency of the world. And they do it everywhere. Everywhere.
Which is why they hate Bitcoin.
Yeah, which, you know, one of my conspiracies is that...
Speaking of that, you can donate to me in Bitcoin on my website at addisontodd.com.
And you can donate to me next time you're walking past a bum on a corner. Just flip him a nickel. It'll get to me eventually.
It'll find its way home, right, Matt?
Yeah.
Yeah, anyways.
To me, that is a 10. I definitely do believe, and I've read evidence, and I've seen online things that I've read, and connecting the pieces myself.
Right.
Looking at who's involved, who actually owns the World Bank, who actually owns the Federal Reserve, who actually runs the Federal Reserve, who they're beholden to, who they mm-hmm. answer to, and they answer to the World Bank and the IMF, and that's it.
Well,
and both those groups. Are doing the same thing. They're doing it just in other countries and on a global scale.
Well, the bigger thing is,
it's part of this bigger picture of currency manipulation.
And who do you think that those people, like World Bank, right? Like who are they going to, in terms of making sure that the checks get somewhere,
mm-hmm.
who do you think they're going to make sure they get to?
Well, what,
themselves.
Yeah, but also what? Who does any bank, who do they...
Make sure the money gets to?
Make sure the money gets... Well, I want to say, who do they answer to?
I know where you're leading, though. Interest.
Like large corporations. Large multi-global, or not multi-global,
multi-global.
Multinational corporations.
Multi-planets.
Right.
You believe in other planets? You think there's aliens?
That other planets exist?
We can segue. I think we were saving aliens, but we can get right into that if you want.
Other planets do exist. I do believe that exoplanets exist.
Okay, see.
Other than the world, United States.
No, well, okay. Well, anyways, to move on, though, I'll give that one, which is just the Federal Reserve. Yeah, I give it a 10.
Okay, so we're both...
Definitely a 10.
10's there. 10's across the board.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so we talked about the economy a little bit. We talked about the IMF, World Bank.
Yeah.
So let's lead into the next one. We'll get to aliens in a second, but while we're on the subject of money...
Oh.
No, while we're on the subject of money, are Jews secretly controlling the world?
I don't think it's a secret, but...
Are Jews secretly controlling the world?
It's an interesting premise.
The state of Israel and Jewish special interest groups.
I'm going to say no, and here's why.
I'm at a zero on that, too.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, here's why. Here's my simple answer. Because if Jews were controlling the world, right, if the state of Israel and or people that are the Judaic nation or whatever across the world, if they were controlling the world, you'd think they could make it run a little bit easier for Israel.
No, they couldn't.
No, if they were controlling things,
there's too many people who hate Israel already.
Well, but that's the thing, though. But if they're controlling things, like that's what this is what I'm presenting as evidence that they don't.
Yeah.
Because of course, if they were controlling it, they'd make it go better.
Well, the big problem with that is China,
like,
and
hey,
Iran.
They would stop those rockets from flying over the border all the time, right? Like if they were really
rockets don't fly over the border into Israel. It's only been a couple times when Israel's actually been under attack. The most it's mostly terrorist kind of violence. It's people throwing rocks. At Israel, it's people firing small arms. It's not. It's people blowing themselves up. It's not.
Right.
It's not
IEDs and
rockets
like
and
yeah.
and you know
heavy military.
Not a heavy military.
Still
the
Palestinians
though,
still
have.
Though, if the Jews were really pulling all the strings behind the scenes, don't you think they could make it go a little easier for Israel? At least from a PR perspective.
Yeah, but I mean, they don't entirely control Israel. It's a very contested.
Now, if Hollywood
world.
Is the world, and the question is rephrased to, do the Jews control Hollywood? 10. I'm gonna put me down on the list as a 10.
I don't think so. Well, I don't think so.
Say
that's
what you
a,
will.
A
You've never had to
too.
Sit in a I'm the network executive here. I'm the one that has to sell our content, and I'm the one that goes into meetings with Jews on a regular basis.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. next topic.
Aliens.
Aliens. Do aliens exist? Are alien abductions real?
2.
Does it happen?
I'm going to give it a 2.
It's a 2?
2 out of 10.
Okay, it's an 8 for me.
Are you serious?
Yeah. the possibility of extraterrestrials on our planet, I think, is strong. I think looking from an anthropological point of view, from archaeology, there are too many indicators that life didn't start on this planet, or at least complex life.
There aren't any examples of that.
Build cars and have rational thoughts.
There's more example for Jesus Christ being the savior of mankind than there are for aliens.
Well, from like a historical point of view, from like just written record, sure.
Excuse me.
But I think there are strong evidences aliens.
Give me a couple really quick ones. Let's not take a lot of time.
Göbekli Tepe. It's a giant subterranean structure. That
what?
Only 5%
no, there
has
isn't.
Been
no,
excavated,
it's not there.
But it's a
it's
giant.
Not there.
Okay, that's not there. What about the what about the Nazca lines in South America?
These another word I don't know.
Monolithic.
What is...
They're these giant monolithic lines, in South America, in Peru, and in Uruguay, mostly in Peru though, that are miles and miles and miles long. I'm talking 10, 20 miles long.
And these are underground?
Or no, what is... they're on the ground. But they're lines that have been people dug into the earth about a foot down, overturned the earth, and then like they salted it so that it would like stay a certain color, and they made straight lines that are in the shapes of birds,
okay,
and weird men with arms coming out of their heads, and what looks like space aliens with helmets on.
So
and
you
like
think
the
they were
gods
drawing
from
what
their
they were seeing
religions and the Quetzalcoatl and stuff like that. Well, hold
on. I can draw an alien on that piece of paper right in front of you. That
yes,
doesn't mean I've seen it.
But these are 10 miles long and they're 5,000 years old.
I'll draw a big alien. Obviously, you had to know I was going to attack the
years
ones
ago,
that we're not going to agree
but
on.
Answer me
like,
the question.
We had like four. Right?
I know. Answer me the question. Why would you do that?
Why would
5,000 years ago, why would you draw a 10 mile bird god in or a 10 mile picture?
I mean, who doesn't
of an
spend
antelope?
Time drawing bird gods? For one,
okay, or a 10 mile long picture of an alien in the earth. Why would you do that? Okay,
because, why not? I mean, there's all sorts of weird religions.
Okay, but from a functional point of view, okay, if you make an idol or make a figurine or even Jesus on the cross, you make it so big, you put it up in the front of the church. People look at it; they have the religious experience, right?
Reflect, right?
Okay, sure. So why create something from a religious point of view?
They can only be seen.
They can only be seen from the air. In its full context,
probably,
and not even just from like 100 feet up. I'm talking from thousands of feet in the sky.
Right. Probably the reason is because there are other extraterrestrial. Oh my god, dude!
Bum bum bum,
dude! You're totally right. Aliens totally exist.
Yeah.
Stupidest thing I've ever heard.
I think the evidence for it is strong, and I think the possibility for it is strong.
It's not strong.
Well.
Okay, riddle me this then, because here's what I hear all the time, right? And people talk about aliens or on Coast to Coast AM or whatever. Because the pyramids is another big one, right? People are like, how did they build the pyramids? Well, you know, you've heard Louis C.K.'s bit on that.
I think so, probably.
But they just threw human suffering at them until they were done.
Yeah.
Just entire races of people.
Bring pyramids up.
Do you think they were built by aliens, though? Let me ask you this.
No, here's the thing. The fact is, pyramid structures are found all over the earth. In almost every culture.
Every continent, right.
Every continent.
Yeah.
I
know I've built pyramids.
from an archaeological point of view,
as a youth,
it's pretty common to see pyramid-built
type structures
even,
right.
Even the mounds here in Illinois,
yeah, right over in Illinois,
Cahokia
right,
Mounds,
right.
Some of the oldest structures in North America, supposedly.
Pyramid-type structures. Right.
Pyramid-type structures.
Right.
Or what looked to have been pyramid-type structures at a certain point. But imagine them building this giant earth mound and then shaping a pyramid made out of mortar over it. Well, after 1,000 years, the mortar is going to be lost, and all you have is the giant mound where these people were buried in. The pyramid structure... It appears all over the earth.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very basic structure.
When people are bored, they build pyramids.
Yeah.
Is basically what we can conclude.
What I'm saying is, most pyramids are also built as a triangle, right?
Right.
A perfect triangle, a unilateral triangle,
right?
Which is one of the simplest forms of geometry and one of the simplest forms of building a structure, right? Because
sure.
You have a strong base, and then you can build high on top of that strong base. So it makes sense that ancient cultures would build in this way, because it's kind of, from a mathematical point of view, it can be complex, but it is kind of obvious.
Yeah.
To someone with no mathematical training, that you build a bigger foundation than you have at the top.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of duh.
Right.
So I'm not going to bring, you know...
So you don't think the pyramids were made by aliens? But here's the thing, though. Even people that say that, though, or like these structures that you're talking about in South America, I think you said.
Mm-hmm.
So then where are they now?
The cultures?
No. Or the aliens?
I don't know.
So you don't... So do you think... let's just jump off the edge.
Let it rip.
Do you think there are humanoid-looking people on this planet that are actually from another planet?
No.
You don't think that?
Well, I can't say conclusively.
No one can say conclusively.
I know. That's why I'm an 8 on it. I think there's a lot of evidence for extraterrestrial.
Well, okay, let me ask you this, then. Do you think there's a lot of evidence for that, that there are human-looking people on this planet that are actually aliens?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I wouldn't rule out contact. from the government, but, you know.
So you think the government's just, you know, chatting up with other planets, you know?
Maybe.
There's a red phone on Obama's desk, and he can call up whatever solar system he wants.
I doubt that the president has access to it like that. Probably a secret government program that no one has known about for a while.
You don't think there's other alien cultures that just...
I think
wake up in the morning and say, "Well, today's a good day to call Obese."
Let's say Roswell is true, and that all that stuff actually happened. There was actually an alien crash in 1947 in the New Mexico desert.
Do you think that
maybe
that there was?
maybe we got some technology, maybe we reverse engineered it.
Yeah.
Do we still maintain contact with them? Probably not. It's probably a one time thing, one and done.
So,
you know.
So basically. In this theory, then, the United States government is handling the aliens like they've handled the Indians and the American people. Basically, okay, we got what we want from you. Now, piss off and be about your business.
The aliens are handling us that way. Like, the aliens know...
Oh.
The aliens know that we're a planet full of dicks. Okay? They know that. They had contact.
We need to start moving on.
That's why they fly over real quick, and then as soon as you see them, they leave. And they disappear as lights, and that's why...
Because they're afraid, because we're dicks, and they don't want to have an interaction with a dick.
Our initial contact with them was just a crash. They didn't want... It was an accident that they started talking to us in the first place.
Right.
You know?
And then they were like... So then, like, when they were getting ready to leave, like, a couple of aliens kind of leaned aside, and they're like, these guys are kind of... You guys want to leave our numbers? They can call us when we leave? No, dude, they're kind of assholes.
Yeah,
Let's not... I mean, I really don't want to leave our number. Well, yeah. I don't know. They're kind of cool. I mean, you know, we can leave the number. And they're like... Let's just get out of here.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Their females have breasts. Our females don't have breasts.
Yeah, but still, I mean, dude, that guy talked to me. He's kind of an asshole.
And yeah, and they all wear business suits. What's up with that?
Yeah, I know. I mean, why can't they just be naked like us?
Yeah, I mean, I'm perfectly fine with this pudgy body and this giant head. I mean, look at this giant head.
I know. You look great, to be honest.
Thank you.
You look good today.
Did you notice the way that I sat, like the creases on the back of my head?
Yeah.
Like I was going...
You look good, even after the accident.
Thank you.
Let's get out of here, though. These guys are assholes.
Oh, yeah. Let's go.
That's what you think happened?
Yeah, basically.
I'm glad we were able to provide some radio theater.
All right. Aliens, 19 Roswell.
Yeah, so mine's a 2. Mark me down for a 2. Damn
all right.
It. Like, I can't... Ugh,
shadow
there's
people.
No way that's true.
Shadow people.
Explain.
Okay, so... the phenomenon of quote unquote shadow people are these people who have sleep paralysis and they wake up and their minds are active, their senses are active.
Isn't that pretty documented?
Yeah, sleep paralysis happens all the time.
Uh-huh.
I suffer from sleep paralysis.
Uh-huh.
I used to know
people that have sex in their sleep too.
It's called date rape, okay, and it's not a joke.
Oh, okay, I apologize.
It happens millions of times across the United States at college campuses everywhere, and it's not funny.
Identity theft isn't a joke, Jim. Millions of families suffer every year.
Sorry, anyway,
reference to The Office.
Sleep paralysis.
Okay, so
happens.
Sleep paralysis, right?
Okay,
uh-huh.
And it's when your mind turns on
when
your body is still in the dream state. Okay, a lot of people think that it's triggered by aliens.
Or
shadow people. Now, what shadow people are spiritual entities
okay.
from other dimensions
right.
who cast a spell of sleep paralysis on you so that they can come and terrorize you.
On a specific person or groups of people?
Whatever. Or are they, and they, okay. they can come and terrorize them and terrorize people. No one really knows what quote-unquote shadow people, what their end game is.
It sounds like a really loose theory.
It is a really loose theory because I think it's a lot of it's hallucinations. Mine for that is zero. I don't believe in shadow people. And you can do more research on shadow people on the internet. Slender Man, things like that. It's kind of the same name for stuff.
I mean, I don't...
And it's kind of a hokey phenomenon that a lot of people interpret their dream state.
Uh-huh.
Because when you suffer from...
See, to me, here's my explanation. Dreams are weird. They're exactly. weird for all of us.
When
process
you suffer
it on
from
your own.
Sleep
I don't
paralysis.
Want to hear about it.
No, yeah. When you suffer from sleep paralysis, what happens is you're asleep, and then your conscious mind, which is also sleep, wakes up without your body waking up. Normally, when your conscious mind wakes up, it triggers the rest of the body to wake up. So your senses... wake up, right?
Mm-hmm.
With sleep paralysis, you have access to all of your senses,
right.
but you have no control over them.
Right.
So you have no motor control. Mm-hmm. You can't open your eyes. And what happens is a lot of people think that they open their eyes and they're looking around the room when they're not actually doing that. They're just seeing the room the way it was
the
last time
it.
They saw it.
Right.
Okay. And it's, you know, obviously in the dark and there's shadows everywhere because it's at night, right?
Uh-huh.
So a lot of people see... in the shadows start to move. Well, that's just your conscious mind or your body when it's still in that dream state, still in the REM cycle, still sleeping. It's imagining thing and your senses are tricking you. So that's where I think that phenomenon comes from. And that's just somebody who, when I was a kid, I sleptwalk all the time, at least once or twice a week.
I did. One time I woke up and I woke up while I was moving my mattress out of my room.
Yeah.
It's not a joke.
Yeah.
I did that.
I would have these over when I was, from the time I was about 7 to the time I was about 12, I would wake up totally paralyzed in sleep paralysis.
Mm-hmm.
And what you have to do is you have to create a totem,
mm-hmm.
kind of like in Inception.
Inception, right.
They call it totem, but I like to call it kick. You have to create a kick, a word that your mind can think, or a visual your mind can
latch onto, right.
that will kick you out of the dream state. Back into reality.
Right.
And lucid dreamers use this all the time. Some sort of kick to either remind you that you're dreaming or not. Like a lot of people say, if you want to lucid dream, every time you go in and out of a room, when you go to grab a doorknob, stop and ask yourself, am I dreaming? Do that for months and months and months on end. Okay.
Right.
Till even when you dream, every time you grab a doorknob in a dream, you're going to automatically ask yourself, am I dreaming?
Mm-hmm.
Once you ask yourself... when you lucid dream, once you ask yourself, am I dreaming, your conscious mind wakes up and the dream can be controlled and you can lucid dream. So, I don't know, maybe when I was 15, I lucid dreamed for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it was really weird, but I would wake up from the time I was about 7 to 10 with these, I would have sleep paralysis and then kind of my mind would wake up and I would have these overwhelming fears of existential dread. Like, the entire world, myself, my life, everyone around me was doomed, and there was nothing we could do about it. And I had this overwhelming...
I think they call that maturity, Matt. I think that hits you as a...
For a seven-year-old?
Oh, good point. Yeah.
I mean, to wake up completely paralyzed, only their minds working, they have no sense of what's going on around them, other than what they last saw of the room. You wake up, and you have this completely terrible... sense of existential dread of doom, where it felt to me as though the world were infinitesimally small, and a U-Haul truck was getting backed up to the world, and this giant boulder from like Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, or in the Temple or Raiders of the Lost Ark, was rolling down,
right,
and getting ready to crush us, and there was nothing we could do about it. It was my subconscious playing tricks on me, but it was. Some of the weirdest things I've ever gone through in my life.
Yeah.
From a subconscious point of view. And I would wake up and I would go to my mom and I would just say, mom, 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 mom. And then I would wake up and I would finally be able to control what I was doing. I would be conscious all the time and remember it. I would just wouldn't be able to control it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's weird. But I think shadow people are some people who don't really understand the phenomena of sleep paralysis. The actual
and
function
of the
sleep.
And what your mind does through the whole process.
What the mind does during the sleep cycle.
Yeah.
And lucid dreaming, they really don't understand how those things tie together.
Yeah.
Which,
because I've had some really weird dream and in and out of dream experiences.
Yeah.
Even like when you told me the other day.
I love dreaming.
Remember the other day when I called you,
mm-hmm.
and you said that you were in a dream, and this kind of stuff happens all the time. This isn't a phenomenal story or anything.
No.
And I called you, and you were like, because you sounded a little off right when you picked up the phone, and then a little bit later, you were like, yeah. So the reason I did that is because in the dream, I dreamed that my phone was ringing, and I picked it up in the dream, and you were there, and it was I've done that before too. I do that all the time. One of my most popular ones, because I think it's for people that have odd hours. I think it happens a lot too, because I notice when I'm sleeping regularly, it doesn't happen as often. But I'll do particularly. I'll wake up like all the time. I'll have a whole conversation with my wife. Like we will decide on plans, and like the next morning she's like, "Don't forget you're going to do this," and I'm like, "What?" And it's just nothing.
Yeah,
just not.
I don't ever have that. I
have that a lot.
When I'm awake, I'm awake. But
see, I can. There's a point between sleeping and between being asleep and being awake for me that I can get to where you think I'm awake.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not.
Yeah.
And we can discuss things but it's in a part of my brain that is locked once I'm awake, mm-hmm. because it happened while I was asleep.
Yeah. But it's definitely it's one of those situations where
maybe it's shadow people. I don't know.
The sensation.
But I'm still going zero.
The sensations that you're getting from your senses, yeah. even though they are asleep and
are corresponding dormant, with the dream.
Are corresponding to the dream.
Yeah.
Outside
control on phenomena like that. Zero.
Yeah. Like sleep fighting. You ever sleep fighting before?
No.
No?
What is that? Just fighting somebody in your sleep?
No. You're dreaming that you're having a fight.
Like you just punch the mic.
I know, but you're dreaming you're having a fight. And uh-huh. I actually...
And then wake up punching somebody or whatever. Yeah.
You wake up and your fists are jerking.
See, that doesn't sound that weird to me. Yeah.
There's a great bit in Park and Recreation where Ron Swanson...
I think I've seen that one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I suffer from sleep fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's move on. Zero for me.
So shadow people were both zero on. Lucid dreaming,
and
though.
And shadow people, I'll say, though, like, let's just define that as an outside source controlling that. Yeah, I don't think that's
But
not
lucid
at all.
Dreaming, the mind playing tricks zero. On the psychology.
Yeah.
The psyche. I'm giving that a 10.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Totally happens. Yeah.
Ghosts. Next on the list.
Well, 10 on lucid dreaming. But ghosts. Zero.
Yep, zero for me too.
Ghosts do not exist.
Once again, the human mind is capable of tricking itself in extraordinary ways that we can't possibly fathom.
Well, and I number one, and that's the number one and main reason why it's a zero. But I'll clarify by saying this. I'm a Christian, and you know, I believe the Bible, right? Mm-hmm. So I do believe in the metaphysical. So, I mean, you ask ghosts, which we'll define that as dead people, right?
Yeah.
Dead people that are spiritual
entities.
The spirits
of the dead coming back to haunt the living.
Do not believe. Yeah. Zero.
Mm-hmm.
However.
Here it comes.
No. I mean, I'm just saying, I do believe that, I do believe in the metaphysical and also in terms of angels and demons. I think both of those exist. Just make all the noise you want. It's fine.
Sorry.
We don't have any production value.
I'm just going to do the show like this from now on because it's more comfortable.
That seems wildly stupid.
Okay. Next up on the list, the pyramids on Mars.
You said ghost, right? Zero?
Yeah. Yeah. Zero for both of us.
Okay.
Pyramids on Mars.
There's no pyramids on Mars.
Okay. So that's zero for you. The face on Mars. The photos that
zero.
Have been taken of Mars. Okay.
Zero.
I'm gonna
pretty
put
much anything you say with Mars is going to be zero for
okay.
me.
Okay, a zero for
I don't
you.
Think, I've said this on the show before, I don't think we should do space exploration, particularly not in Mars.
It's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. I hate the fact that you think that.
Well, be that as it may.
For me, it's a two. I mean, it's grainy photographs that we haven't really gone back to explore those regions. Anyway, what about...
I mean, if you breach your contract, you have to pay me severance, so...
Okay.
If you want to leave the show.
What about the Holy Grail? Do you think that people have found the Holy Grail? That do you think, number one, the Holy Grail exists?
Like the movie?
No, but the
whole... Because 10, I love the movie.
The Cup of Christ used the Last Supper. Do you believe that it exists, okay. number one? Number two, that we found it, or that humanity has found it and knows where it is, or somebody does. Number three, that it has some sort of magical or mysterious properties.
Number one, I believe it exists. Okay. Of course, he drank out of a cup.
Sure.
I mean, okay.
Or that it did exist at a certain point.
Yeah. I mean, he drank out of something. It mm-hmm. says he passed the cup. You know, it says he who dips into the cup with me, right?
Sure.
Like there was,
and
there
they
was,
were eating dinner. They're probably going to be drinking.
Right. There's some type of cup at the Last Supper.
Sure.
Absolutely. What was the second one?
Whether
whether we found it.
Yeah, whether we know it, like the relic, whether we know the location of the holy relic, whether that relic is actually...
I'll approach that the same way. Maybe, because a cup is a cup is a cup.
Yeah.
It could be in the museum, the art museum downtown, or the history museum, or whatever it is. Like, that's... Sure, we could have found it.
Okay.
Three, here's the killer, though. Significance and or magic powers? Nope. Okay. No significance, no magic powers, no nothing. Gotcha. Same thing, and I'll apply this. Shroud of Turin. Okay. Mary's breast milk, all that, you've heard all that stuff.
The blessed milk of the Virgin.
Yeah, all that bullshit.
The Holy Mother's breast milk.
That doesn't mean anything. And there's no spiritual, like, that's my problem with Catholicism in general, getting back to a religious perspective. Mm-hmm. Images, man.
Yeah.
Images. It's about the relationship with Jesus Christ. It has nothing to do with what he touched or ate or where he walked. Mm-hmm. Now, would I go to the Holy Land with the opportunity to supposedly see the place where he was buried and things like that? Absolutely. I think that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, like, but you're looking at it from the historical and the anthropological and the archaeological.
There's no metaphysical attachment to items that were around Jesus Christ.
Okay. Same three questions about about the Ark of the Covenant.
That's a little different.
How?
Because of the way God... because the significance that it had in the Old Testament and the way God... I mean, he struck down somebody because he tried to catch it when it fell, right?
Supposedly.
If you believe the Bible, right?
That's the story.
Yeah, that's supposedly what happened. So a little bit different. But still, I think I'm going to apply the same logic. Artifacts, man, they don't mean anything. God does, artifacts don't.
Yeah. All right, so...
What about you on that third one? I'm particularly interested in the second one. Because the first one, you agree with me, right?
The Holy Grail. I feel the same way about the Ark of the Covenant. The only thing that interests me about that is how many people are after it. Supposedly, the Nazis were after the Ark of the Covenant because it has some sort of, you know, magical powers that, you know, can...
As if
its enemies or whatever.
As if, let's put this there. As if there were magic powers attached to the Ark of the Covenant, that the holy God of the Bible, once found by the Nazis, would go ahead and let them keep those powers.
Well, hey, maybe he created this technology and he doesn't really control it. He just, you know.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, now so speaking on Nazis.
What do you think about Noah's Ark?
What about it? Does it exist?
Yeah.
I think probably. Yeah. There's probably a large boat out there that's been preserved since antiquity.
Yeah. I think it does too.
That somebody survived on.
I think there's some imagery.
However, I think it's probably just a large boat and not a whole lot more. I don't really believe in a global flood.
Right.
A localized flood that seemed global, sure, absolutely could happen.
I believe in a global flood.
Okay.
I really do. And I think I do think that the boat's somewhere out there.
Okay.
I think there's been some digging that happened in
Turkey.
In what people pretty much think would have been Mount Ararat. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
I think it's there. And again, but my only interest in that is not to get a sliver of Noah's Ark and save my soul or curse the damned. Mm-hmm. It's to, I think that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. Like, find out what happened.
Yeah. Oh, this is Noah's Ark. Like, look at the evidence of whatever on the boat or who was on the boat or how big it was or all that kind of stuff. Because I think that's cool.
So we know that the Third Reich was going after the Ark of the Covenant, and they were going after a lot of religious artifacts.
They were going after the Tesseract, too. I don't know if you've seen the Marvel movies, but...
they were going after a lot of religious artifacts.
Real quick, if you follow popular culture in the last 30 years, the Nazis had their spoon, they had their ladle in a lot of soups.
You know why?
Like Wolfenstein. I mean, every video game, every movie.
Why? Because writers love history. Writers love to go back and look at history and find out the stories behind it, what actually happened.
And make up their own.
And then extrapolate upon those ideas. Writers aren't a very... speaking as one, right? We're not a very original bunch, okay? There's not a whole lot of imagination
just saying
there.
It differently and well.
People who grow up and with good imaginations become schizophrenic, not writers, okay?
Okay, what were you going to say, though?
So... The Third Reich did try to go after things like Ark of the Covenant.
Right.
Because, hey, if it's false and it doesn't have any magical powers, then at best you have a religious artifact that thousands of people are going to flock to and
from an economic sense, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They went after artwork, right?
Right.
They went after a lot of state secrets. And there were even special missions sent to Antarctica. Because
Hitler believed
that Atlantis, the remnants of Atlantis, were buried beneath the glaciers of Antarctica.
You believe in Atlantis?
Whether or not it's a specific... Oh, another thing that Hitler's in the Third Reich was going after, too, was the library at Alexandria. They wanted to... One of the reasons why they went into North Africa and started to invade Egypt, which they did, or at least try to, was because a lot of people don't remember that a lot of World War II mm-hmm. was in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a lot of French Foreign Legion, stuff like that. Anyway, but Hitler went to Egypt to try and uncover the Library of Alexandria. Uh-huh. Because supposedly, underneath the Sphinx, supposedly, according to legend, is miles underneath the Sphinx.
Miles under.
Is buried the lost archives from the Library of Alexandria. Now, Alexandria was a Grecian city, right?
Right.
There were 13 of them that were like 1000 BC, around that era.
Sure.
And the library at Alexandria in Egypt was supposedly the compendium of all knowledge on Earth.
Okay, so kind of tying into...
It was a giant library, and it had ancient books from thousands and thousands of years ago for what we would consider prehistory, but the Greeks considered history. They looked at Atlantis like we would look at
the Greeks,
Mesopotamians, or Sumerian religion.
Yeah,
right.
And so supposedly that's all contained.
Supposedly that's all contained there, hidden under the Sphinx. Whether that exists. Well, when Alexandria was sacked by the Romans, they supposedly hid all this information underneath the Sphinx. Anyway. And that's part of the secret that the Knights Templar and the Illuminati protect. Anyway.
Yeah.
You believe in the Nazis. I don't know that I would call them the Illuminati, but I think there is a handful of very powerful men who try and manipulate the world on a global scale. And that goes back to bankings and the banking industry and things like that.
But I'd probably agree with that, too.
Hitler did try to go to Egypt to find this library and try and gain all this lost knowledge for the Third Reich.
Right.
He thought that there was secrets buried underneath the Sphinx, and he thought that the remnants of Atlantis were buried underneath the glacier of Antarctica.
Right.
So, because 26,000 years ago, the poles of the Earth were shifted.
Right.
Right. So Antarctica was somewhere near the equator, right? And there are also maps from...
So the Garden of Eden is now under one of the poles.
Yeah. There are maps...
See, Matt, science.
There are maps from 680
right.
that show Antarctica, the complete coastline of Antarctica.
Yeah.
And are still very accurate.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is, and people were mystified by them at first, they thought they were made up maps
right.
until they discovered Antarctica.
Yeah.
Because what the maps show is it shows a landmass, a circular landmass.
Uh-huh.
With this little tail coming off of it, in the middle of the map, and then off the sides of the map, they show the southern tip of South America and the southern tip of Africa.
So it's in the southern
hemisphere. And Australia over there,
below the equator.
Yeah, but it's like we would create a map of the southern hemisphere, or we would create a map of the western hemisphere.
Uh huh.
They were creating a map of the southern hemisphere that was centric.
Right.
That where Antarctica was
from that landmass.
The central landmass, the main landmass, just like we would have a map made of the Western Hemisphere that had the United States and South America as the main landmass.
Do you believe that? You think that the Antarctica was once?
Maybe. I think human history is much, much longer than we think it is.
I'd probably subscribe to that, too.
We've had the same amount of intelligence and the same abilities for 50,000 years. As a species, we've had that same intelligence and abilities for 50,000 years. The same mind that we think with now is the same mind that 50,000 years ago was able to think and understand and have the capabilities for language, communication, math, and art that we do now, just without the technological aids that we have now.
Yeah.
Okay?
Well, maybe not even that, though, because I've heard some I'll say, whacked out Christians sort of theorize about before the flood, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, there's the whole vapor canopy theory and, yeah, and oxygen and a lot of different theories about what would contribute to people living that much longer, right? Mm-hmm. And there's some theories that maybe, and you have to look high and low to find them, but maybe human, like, civilization was advanced enough to where the biblical account is true in terms of God having said, you've blown it. You've gotten to a point where, you know, like, because the surprising thing is, if you look at it, at the narrative of the Bible, maybe there's, like, that's, like, what, 300 years, if that. Not even mm-hmm. that. Like, I mean, you know, certain people were still alive. It wasn't that long at all.
Yeah.
But if you look at that in terms of civilization and how long it would take for that to do, for God to get to that point, and he still hasn't yet, even in just our time span, mm-hmm. like if you look at human history, so maybe there's a whole other section of human history between, say, the garden, quote sure. unquote, and the beginning or mm-hmm. however you look at that, and the flood or what would yeah. be the flood. Maybe there's a whole section of art and economic development and technological development and research and sciences and mathematics and things like that. Mm-hmm. Because, and maybe it's not that crazy that people were living that long. Yeah. Just saying.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they did or they didn't. I'm just saying
I think if
the possibilities there.
If I were to believe in a working model of the Bible, I think that's probably what my theory would be.
Right.
However, 50,000 years with this brain, don't tell me that our history started 10,000 years ago.
Right.
We've been building stuff and creating stuff, and we've had specific cultures and histories for the past 50,000 years.
Yeah.
Right? We have cave paintings that are 65,000 years old.
Well, see, and thanks to the internet, which is where this podcast is available, thanks to the internet, thought has stopped.
You think?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, don't you think so? Because to me, like, if you look over the course of, like, let's take the last 5,000 years, for example. 4,000.
Yeah.
And you look at what changed certain things. It was certain, sometimes people, sometimes individual people, or ideologies that took over, right? And then mm-hmm. out with the old, in with the new, right?
Yeah, sure.
Thanks to the internet, that's never going to happen again.
Mm-hmm.
As long as the internet's here, that's never going to happen again.
Maybe.
No, how would it ever happen again?
Well, I think there's still a lot of smart
people. Because if you tell me about an ideology right now, what am I going to do? I'm going to Google it.
Yeah.
I'm going to read all about it.
Yeah.
May write some of my own. Contribute some.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all that can be done.
Okay.
Because it's all out there.
Yeah.
Every single bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're done.
Start
drinking Brondo. It's
Brondo
over.
Has what
it's
plants
over, man.
Need. It has electrolytes.
It's over.
I don't know.
Right? I mean, where am I wrong? Like, there's no new thought that can happen.
There are. They're
like
just,
what?
Just no one pays attention to it.
Exactly. I mean, that's the two spectrums. No, either it exists and you can find out everything about it, or no one pays attention to it because they're more concerned with what's in their Netflix
list. There are legitimate
list.
Scientists out there trying to solve the mysteries of the universe, trying to... Further,
I can't name any.
Further the causes of art and literature and science and math and the overall progression of the human species, right? It's just no one pays attention because Kim Kardashian.
Exactly.
Because what's on TV tonight? But see, but human history has been doing that, or humans have been doing that for our entire history.
But again, thanks to the internet, though.
We live in a great age of distraction, yes, I'll give you that. However, humans as a whole... We try to distract ourselves.
Right. Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Before it was the internet, it was sitting around campfires after you've worked 14 hours a day.
Or the newspaper.
Gathering
or
food.
Right.
Or you know, I'm talking like 10,000 years ago, right?
Yeah.
What did people do? They either hunted and gathered for the entire time that it was daylight outside, or they worked on a farm trying to grow food.
Or they had
the
sex.
Entire time there was daylight out. And then when there wasn't daylight, they ate. They had sex, they fell asleep. That's what they did.
Yeah.
There wasn't time to blow on things like the internet, right?
Mm-hmm.
So even then, people didn't have a lot of time to sit back and think about the mysteries of the universe. and contemplate science. It wasn't until the introduction of mass agriculture when people actually had this thing that they'd never had before, which was free time. They could spend time at leisure, trying to simply survive.
But now we've gone the other way. So that, but that's what I'm saying. So when that happened, we had about 8,000 good years, and now that's wasted. Now we have this thing called the internet. It's done.
Yeah.
It's done.
Maybe. Maybe. All right, so
what's next
so our Nazis in Antarctica. So I'm going to say that's a 10 because I know that happened.
No, it, what? No, right. How, what makes you think it did?
Because there's well-documented...
Wait, are you asking if they went there?
Yeah.
Oh, then yeah, I think they went there.
Yeah, the Nazis, Nazis sent missions to Antarctica.
Oh, yeah, I think they went all over the place, yeah.
Whether they found anything or anyone's found anything there, I don't know.
Exactly, yeah, I'm going to leave that up. Because there are people that think that, like, I mean, there's people that the next step to that thought process is, I mean, there's people that think they met with aliens, there's people that think that they hung out with, like, United States top officials and just kind of ran the war and everyone was pals. Like, there's a lot of theories that go from there. I'm not going to get on board with any of those. Did the Nazis go to Antarctica? Yeah, I think so.
All right. Did the Nazis go to the moon and build a secret moon base there?
Nope.
Okay. That's a no for me, too.
We didn't go to the moon either.
Did they go to Mars?
No.
Nazis on Mars? No Nazis on Mars?
Nope.
What about the moon, Jupiter's moon, Europa? Did
nope.
Did Nazis go to Europa?
Nope.
Okay. Moon landing.
What about you for any of those?
No on all of them.
Yeah.
Moon landing, fake or real?
Real. Now, I'm going to take it a step further, just like you did with 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Real. But what was the purpose of it? Was it because that's what the world needed and so we could beat the Russians mm-hmm. and this is a whole precursor to the Cold War? Or was it just space exploration?
It was space exploration?
No, it was not. It was all that other stuff.
You think?
Yes. There's so much more intrigue and reason to go to the moon than we should go to the moon. Like,
what
we would have been there 1,000 years ago if it was to go to the moon.
Because
1,000 years ago, man was content to sit and look up at the moon and say, that's pretty. Oh, do you want to go there? No. Why would I want to do that?
Okay, first off, we didn't have...
Same thing now. Why do you think we're not on the moon right now?
We didn't have the technological ability to get to the moon 1,000 years ago.
What's on the moon right now? A United States flag. Because America. We don't need to go back.
All right. First off, there's really nothing on the moon for us to mine. There's no minerals on the moon that aren't plentiful on
so
Earth.
Don't go back.
So there's no really commercial reason to go to the moon.
So the only reason to go
When was the last time we went to the moon?
60s something?
1970s.
Yeah.
I think it was like 77.
Really? That
no,
late?
No, it was 73.
I was going to say, I don't think it was that late.
72, 73, right?
Right.
So we went to the moon. We found out that there was really nothing for us on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Since the 1980s, what has been controlling the arm of progress in this world?
Kanye West.
Okay, him and...
capitalism?
Corporations, right?
Corporations.
Corporate
right?
interests, okay?
Okay.
Right. We're still
Richard
on Branson's we're still
gonna
on
go to the moon.
We're
is
still
that the point
on
going
fossil
to?
No, we're still on fossil fuels.
Right.
Burning
stuff in a
we
car.
Haven't,
right.
We haven't developed any sort of alternative technologies, even though they're out there.
We've got the combustion engine, basically.
We're still on old combustion engine that's been around for, you know, 150, 200 years.
Right.
So the technological advantage of going to the moon, mining things on the moon, and the business side of going to the moon is no longer there. There's nothing else we can learn from going to the moon, and there's no money that could be made by going to the moon.
Right.
So we're not going there anymore.
Right.
That's why we haven't gone back.
No, I agree, yeah.
I mean, we go to space all the time, but it's for satellite maintenance.
Yeah.
It's to launch new satellites. That's what NASA did almost all during the 80s and 90s with the shuttle program, was they... Every time they went up, they took a half a dozen satellites with them.
Yeah.
You know, you can fit 2 full-size pickup trucks in the cargo hold of a shuttle.
Yeah.
They took giant satellites with them every time they went up and launched them. Okay, that's what it was for.
Mm-hmm.
So now that we have all these satellites in orbit and we can now launch satellites, you know, all we really need to know is be able to study the long-term effects of space... of living in the environment of space on the human body, on, being able to set up and create a station that orbits the Earth, which we have now, a mm-hmm. multinational station, the International Space Station, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is one of the best things that NASA does and what space programs around
Why?
The world do.
No, it doesn't. Doesn't
to study
thing.
The effects of space on the human body to Who be cares? Able to see whether or not you can survive permanently in space on a space station. Because ultimately, ultimately, throughout all of history, if once you get to a certain point, you have to expand. You expand or you die. Okay?
And we've got not there with the world.
Yeah, we are. 7 billion people. We've reached critical mass. Yes.
If you think we're overcrowded, then you're not looking at the right place. We are
overcrowded and overpopulated.
You can go to places on planet Earth that are totally habitable by humans that are empty.
Sure.
So go there then.
A lot of them. But it's, number one, harder to live there. But number two, I'm not talking about the having space for everyone. Okay? It's not a matter of space. It's not a matter of everybody being able to have their own acre where they can set up their house and live, right? It's not about people being able to spread out. Yeah, we could spread out, give everybody 20 acres on the earth and be fine, right?
Mm-hmm.
We could do that.
Mm-hmm. I'll take mine.
But it's
where do I sign up for that?
It's not a matter of space. It's a matter of resources. Right. It's a matter of paying the bills, okay?
But see,
it's a matter of having clean drinking water. It's being able, the biggest thing is being able to feed everybody.
Yeah.
In the world.
Yeah.
Okay. And balancing agriculture with the needs of
the population. But those are all science and technology.
Which is what space exploration is about.
Yeah, but
we have solar technology, the ability to create energy from the sun. Imagine if we stop using fossil fuels, which are going to run out in a couple of years anyway, but we stop using gas and oil, we stop fracking and went to solar energy, which we can. There are solar powers now that put out 100 times the amount of energy that they take in.
Right.
So it's a feasible,
yeah,
is
solar power.
If we built the if we had built the infrastructure 20 years ago the way hippies wanted to do, we could be able to power our infrastructure now with solar energy. It's something that could have happened. It's a fact. We can do it now. We have the technology. We just don't have the large infrastructure or the amount of money behind it to fund these projects. Okay. But
space exploration doesn't automatically do that.
Where did solar panels come from? Where did the modern solar panel come from?
What do you mean?
It came from the modern solar panel, the solar panel that's able to put out 100 times more energy than it takes in.
So, like, why was it invented?
Or where it was invented for the space program because we wanted to go to space and we wanted to use the... It was invented... you ever heard of solar sails?
Hold on, though. But that's a different point than you were making a second ago about needing a place to go for expanding.
I was getting to that, but then you interrupted me with the whole... And I had to make the resources argument and everything else like that.
But that doesn't... But expanding... We don't need to expand because the room is here. It's how we use it in terms of resources and things that I don't think space exploration helps as much as just blood, sweat, and tears of looking into these
things.
There's
no oil on the moon. Okay.
Right.
And...
Or gold or...
Yeah. But
forests or anything else.
But they are on other planets. To be able to go to other planets, to be able to harvest those chemicals or the ore or whatever that we need,
zero,
that we want.
Was this back to the question thing? Because I don't think that can happen.
Okay. All right.
You really think there's planets out there that have things that we can harvest that will help us here on Earth? You believe that?
Yeah. I think that in order for the United, not for the United States, but for the human space,
there's that Americanism.
The human species as a whole to survive and to be able to keep expanding at the rate we're expanding at, we have to turn to space and we have to look to large amounts of our population living and working in space, bringing back resources to the Earth so that we can keep sustaining the system that we have in place right now.
I don't believe there are resources out there. Ladies and gentlemen, I have frozen my co-host, Matt Hume.
So gold, hydrogen, light, and heavy elements—they only exist on the Earth. For instance, helium—we're running out of helium. In about 7 years to 10 years, we'll be completely out of helium. There won't be any more helium in the world.
Okay.
Right now, even right now, they are.
We're running out of helium. Hold on. What's your point, though?
There's helium in other planets. On other planets, Jupiter is full of helium.
So you're talking elements as opposed to brick and mortar type.
Yeah, I'm not talking about concrete. I'm not talking about going to Jupiter for concrete. I'm talking about going to Jupiter for precious elements, for things that we might need, for unobtainium, like an Avatar, okay?
I don't know. It's a terrible movie.
I know, but...
Blue people having sex.
Yeah, it's James Cameron. He's a lazy writer.
Anyways, let's move on to some more topics here, because we've wasted a lot of time on this
one. No, that's the whole list.
Was that the whole list, really?
Yeah.
What about remote viewing? Well, I'll ask you that one. Do you believe in remote viewing? Do you believe it is possible for people to do what remote viewers claim to do?
Yes. Whether I think that...
One for our listeners.
Yeah. I think that maybe 1 in 1 million remote viewers are actually able to remote view.
And for our listeners, remote viewing is when you can tap into a spiritual side of you or a metaphysical side of you in order to view something that is going on at a place other than where you're at, right? Correct me if I'm wrong.
The third eye exists. It's called the pineal gland. Using that, the substance known as DMT that the pineal gland secretes, it's pretty obvious from kind of what we know from the function of the brain that the pineal gland regulates melatonin and the sleep cycle.
Yeah.
And it also, a lot of the ancient cultures believe the pineal gland was where the soul resided in the body.
Right.
It's the house of the soul. And the third eye and opening up your chakras and everything else is being able to open up your consciousness to the larger picture of the universe and the larger universal consciousness that our individual consciousnesses are attached to. I think that remote viewing is certainly possible. Probable? No, it's not probable. No, it's not. Whether does it happen? Sure, but then a lot of weird things happen that can't be explained.
Yeah, I think I'd pretty much agree with you.
But I don't believe in like the teachings of Edgar Cayce or anything like that.
It's the people that say you can be taught how to remote view, right? Zero, right?
Yeah, I'm not a big proponent of it.
Yeah. And I feel like there was one other one I was going to ask you about, remote viewing. Oh, well, two more. Chemtrails?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the government's experimenting with controlling the weather? And then this leads into the second one, or putting substances into the atmosphere. And on that one, do you think the government is, on some large scale, either via a chemtrail type thing or just in substances across the board, you know, with the FDA or whatever, or they're turning a blind eye to certain things in order to either not control people, but keep them docile or that kind of thing, like to do some kind of mass effect on the people.
Chemtrail, I don't know. It's
possible.
Sure, but then a lot of things are possible. whether or not the United States is intentionally poisoning its population or the population of the world.
Yeah.
It's possible. Fluoride is bad for you. Sodium fluoride is put in all our water. It's put in our toothpaste, and it's put in rich.
So on that second one, that's one you subscribe
to. It's put in rich flour. So yeah. Sodium fluoride is bad for you. It calcifies the pineal gland. It calcifies parts of your brain. It turns off it is meant to slowly kill the spiritual centers of the mind. Now, I don't put a whole lot of stock into the spiritual centers of the mind. However, it's a front of science.
Uh-huh.
That has gone in the past 100 years has gone from purely religion and purely theological and dogma to an element of science. And we're slowly understanding how the mind works and how spirituality works and how the consciousness works in the mind. And so we've been doing something for, 80 years now, which is putting sodium fluoride in the water that has been proven to calcify.
That function
and sodium fluoride is in nature, and as you grow older, the
calcifies naturally.
The pineal gland and the thalamus naturally calcify, but they don't really harden and die until you're dead, until you're old. So it's a long process. However, refined sugars that have sodium fluoride, rich flour that has sodium fluoride, our water that has sodium fluoride, toothpaste contains sodium fluoride. That's all, and it's an agent that accelerates the calcification of the pineal gland. But not the Third Reich in Poland and in Europe during World War II put sodium fluoride, and this was the first instance of sodium fluoride being put into a water supply was in Poland during World War II in concentration camps. They gave it to people who are in concentration camps to keep them docile. And if in a large enough dose, sodium fluoride will keep you docile. That's why prison foods taste salty. Mm-hmm. You ever wonder why prison food tastes salty? I mean, you don't know. I don't know. But it's been said on the internet that prison food is really, really salty.
Right.
It's because they do put sodium fluoride in the food.
Right.
So, to keep the prisoners docile.
Right.
And it happens. And we've been doing it now for 80 years. So, every one of us has grown up on tap water, right?
Yeah.
And we've been drinking it and brushing our teeth with it for years and years. We've ingested enough now that... So, you know, is the United States and...
So, if you stop drinking water, you'll punch me in the face in these episodes instead of just yelling at me.
Exactly.
Is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No,
You'll get back to your animalistic roots.
Yeah. So, is the Illuminati trying to poison the drinking water so they can poison and calcify our pineal glands and shut us off spiritually?
Probably.
Maybe. Maybe.
Yeah.
Look to the stars, people. The new world order is rising. Open up your inner eye.
And how about that blood moon?
Yeah, the blood moon.
That's pretty weird.
The orange moon.
I don't think we talked about that on the
show. No, we did. We talked about the beginning of the show.
Did we?
Yeah.
Well, we've been going for the greater part of 2 hours, so...
An hour 45.
Yeah, this is our longest episode.
Yeah, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm going to go back and listen to it because I want to listen to my opinions on...
Well, as I've said before,
topics.
You are our biggest and biggest fan.
Yeah. Yep, I am. Anyway, this has been Give That Some Thought.
Yes.
I hope you enjoyed this episode, this write-off episode of just us being silly and entertaining these wild, interesting thoughts and kind of treating some of the subject the way it should be, which is with seriousness, but then treating the other subject matter with seriousness too.
Right.
But just for an entertainment
and,
value.
And going back to our actual show, Give That Some Thought. Mm-hmm. I think that's what we've done here on each one of these topics.
Yep.
We've given that some thought.
Yep.
You know, to a couple different sides of things and looked at some different possibilities and some different validity of some theories. But yeah, we're giving that some thought. So Matt is at @suburban_wizard on Twitter. I'm at Addison Todd. Connect with us. You can connect with the show at Give Thought Show on Twitter as well. Facebook.com/givethatsomethought. We'd love to hear from you.
Yes, we would.
Hopefully this show prompted some very interesting thoughts. Perhaps even some interesting dreams.
Mm-hmm.
I know Matt and I would love to hear about those.
Mm-hmm.
Until next week, this has been Give That Some Thought.
I'm Matt.
I'm Addison.
Thanks for listening.
This has been a production of Tripod Broadcasting.